You're listening to NBC Sports Radio. Weekends. This is Speaking of Sports
with Jim Daniels
on NBC Sports Radio, where every day is game day.
And now,
it's Jim Daniels.
He's such a great man, and I know that, you know, he's been through so much in his life, and people have gone through it with him. And I think they just do have so much love and respect for him because of who he is as a person, not just how great he was inside the ring.
First of all, my condolences go to the Ali family. Rest his soul to the GOAT. Just so many thoughts come to my mind when I think about the man who passed away yesterday. What he represented. As a kid, I gravitated towards him because he was a champion, but I only knew as a kid of what he did inside the ring. As I got older and I started to be more knowledgeable about sport in general and about the guys who paved the way for guys like myself, I understood that he is the greatest of all time, and he was the greatest of all time because of what he did outside of the ring.
Muhammad Ali was in his prime when I was a kid, 8-10 years old, just after Vietnam, just after the civil rights movement, and he was probably the most prominent athlete of the time as it related to social issues. So what he did went so far beyond the boxing ring, the sporting arena in general. What he did, not just for African Americans, but for all Americans, in terms of trying to promote equality, in terms of really raising the level of consciousness about what was happening in the country. Probably the most influential athlete in the history of our country.
I think everything he went through in life, you know, certain people are courageous. He's very courageous in doing what no other athlete probably would have dared to have done, and particularly a black athlete at that time. To me, he's inspired people who look at the inequalities in this world. You know, he changed the perception of people, but he was a magnificent person. I loved that guy. I really did.
In Atlanta, I thought I was the biggest person. But then when I found out it was Ali, then I found out something else, that his humanitarian work that he did was just so big.
He hit me with a quick 1-2, knocked me down to the canvas, and my whole life changed. I was devastated. Little did I know I would make the best friend I ever had in my life.
He's an inspiration to the boxing. It's a big loss for boxing.
He was a defiant man of dignity, challenging the system using the platform of boxing.
I have wrestled with an alligator. I done tussled with a whale. I done handcuffed lightning, throw thunder in jail. That's bad. Only last week, I murdered a rock, injured a stone, hospitalized a brick. I'm so mean, I make medicine sick.
The greatest of all time, Muhammad Ali, the celebration of his life continues, and you're going to see this outpouring of love and respect, I think, for probably the better part of the week. The services in Louisville are going to be later on in this week, but in the meantime, we celebrate a life, which is always, I think, the best thing to do. And we've had lots of practice this year. I tell you, 2016 has been a very difficult year for death in the world of celebrity, be that in motion pictures or film or television or, in this case, sports. Muhammad Ali, wow, you just don't get a figure any bigger than that. What he meant to so many people and so many genres, actually, the sports world, the boxing world, the black community, the poor, the rich, the political world, was just second to none. Good morning. It's NBC Sports Radio, NBCSportsRadio.com. This is Speaking of Sports. I'm Jim Daniels. We're here every Sunday morning talking about the stories and individuals that make a difference in the sports world, kind of push the box score aside and talk more about the individuals. Going to do that specifically this morning with Muhammad Ali. The show is brought to you by Grainger, serving you with the products you need to help keep your facility running. Call, click, or stop by today. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. I've been sharing quotes, and I've said this a number of times this morning, that when you do what we do for a living, you sift through a ton of material trying to find the very best stuff that you can bring your audience. And in the case of Muhammad Ali, the material well is so deep and so full that you can hardly scratch the surface. There's absolutely no chance, none whatsoever, that I'm going to get everything in here that I want to get in. Comments from him or about him, quotes that he said or others said, can't even come close. Then there's his record and the numbers, and it's overwhelming, really. But, you know, he said so many things, from the funny stuff like talking about boxing. It's just a job. Grass grows, birds fly, waves pound the sand. I beat people up. To quotes like, hating people because of their color is wrong, and it doesn't matter which color does the hating. It's just plain wrong. Wow. What this guy meant to not just boxing, not just sports, not just entertainment, not just America, not just black people, but what he meant to everyone in this country, and really I willingly extend that to planet Earth, is remarkable. And I say we'll never be matched again. Part of that is because of the times that we live in, and the times that, I should say that, I don't want to say he grew up in, but the time that he evolved in, you know, what he had to endure, what he had to go through, what he was willing to go through. You know, one of the best things I ever heard him say, or something that struck me when I heard it back in the day, when he was talking about the fact that, you know, he didn't want to go to war, when he said, I'm a conscientious objector. I really am. And somebody asked him to explain, and he said, I refuse to go halfway around the world to go kill other poor people that I don't even know. Man, think about that statement in the context of war, right? Muhammad Ali, the greatest of all time. We'll speak with the Rick Horro coming up here in just a few minutes. Ask Rick for one of his favorite moments, or something that he enjoyed and wants to share with us about Muhammad Ali. I've also got some tweets from some notable people. More sound, of course, and more quotes. The funny ones are the greatest. I mean, the fact that he rapped and rhymed before there was rapping and rhyming. Again, I've said this before, too. I didn't even know what rap was until about 1984, I guess, when Run DMC hit the scene, you know, with It's Tricky and Adidas and all of that kind of stuff. This guy was rapping and rhyming 20 years before these guys were even born. He was rapping and rhyming. But the quotes, they're endless. It never stops. How tall are you? So I can know in advance how far to step back when you fall down. And then there's the whole Howard Cosell connection. And maybe that's where I'll try and lead Rick Horro, is because Muhammad Ali and Howard Cosell had a very special relationship. I've watched a lot of it on television this morning on one of the screens in my studio here, and watched it go by, and watched from the early days of the ABC Wide World of Sports in black and white, where they're both sitting there in suits trying to look at least somewhat proper, to the more relaxed scenes in front of a fireplace and things are in color. And they both got it. They both understood that they not necessarily needed each other, but it was good for both of them, good for business for both of them, to continue to support each other and playfully go after each other. I always love it when Muhammad would at some point stand up and shuffle a feet and start taking a couple of swings at Howard, you know, and then of course his reaction. I mean, honestly, Muhammad Ali made Howard Cosell really what he was. I mean, this is a remarkable man on his own, but Muhammad Ali elevated him, even him. I mean, everyone that he came in contact with, he elevated. So the celebration of a life this morning, as we continue to remember fondly the greatest of all time, Muhammad Ali, as well as some of the fights. And we'll get into a little bit more of that as we continue on here with Speaking of Sports. Also on the program this morning, a couple of other things. Like I said, Rick Horro will be joining us. The professor always talks the business of sports with us. But an opportunity to speak with the former Cleveland Brown player, Paul Zukauskas, who is going to remember very fondly one of his coach at Boston College, who sadly passed away not too long ago, also, ironically, of Parkinson's disease. And we'll talk with him about the special relationship he had with his coach and what that coach meant to so many NFLers who have stepped up and tried to make a difference in the lives of his family now that he is gone at such a young age and leaving small children behind. So we'll talk to Paul as well, and hopefully Pete Fox is going to join us, as he always does in the last segment. So stay with us. More to come as we celebrate the life of Muhammad Ali. Speaking of sports, on NBC Sports Radio and NBC Sports Radio's mobile app. NBC Sports Radio, NBCSportsRadio.com, mobile app, all yours, free at the App Store, Google Play Store, wherever you like to get that stuff. Jim Daniels with you for Speaking of Sports. Glad that you've made us a part of your day. Appreciate that. Things a little bit different this morning with the passing of the greatest Muhammad Ali. Lots of talk, discussion, sound, quotes, comments about the greatest of all time. This is the time that we speak with the professor of sports. Rick Horro joins us to talk about the business, the marketing, the issues, the dollars that go on in the sports world. You know, first of all, good morning, Rick. And once again, thanks for being with us early on this Sunday morning. Appreciate that.
Good morning. Let's talk Ali for a few minutes, too, if you don't mind, before we do our stuff. I assume you will.
Can we please? You know, because I've talked a lot about this, and because you are in my age demographic, if you don't mind my saying so, I want to talk a little bit about the special relationship between Muhammad Ali and Howard Cosell. Those two didn't need each other, but boy, did they feed off of each other, didn't they?
Yeah, well, and that's kind of the bottom line. And Howard Cosell was a writer, and he was in the right place at the right time. I had a real great opportunity to spend some time with him. He was kind of a mentor where he said, you know, talk and be loud and be intelligent and be smart and know what you're saying. And if you know what you're saying and you're comfortable about it, you did the research, you can present it any way you want, especially capture people's attention. And by the way, I think that's what Ali did as well. And he was intelligent and he spoke, but he had the courage of his convictions. When you look at some of the things that he did, you know, yeah, it was 61 fights in 21 years, and you made $6 million in the Thrill of Manila in 75, and another 5.5 in the Rumble in the Jungle, and you know, today's dollars, you'd have a few zeros to that. But how about some of the things that he did leave behind? I mean, he basically created WWF and MMA.
Sure.
Remember the 1976 match with Antonio Inoki? You may not remember that, but it was an exhibition match where you could use all of your limbs. And everybody got upset because Ali was saying he was a boxer, not this. But that led to this. By the way, the other thing, let me just suggest that he really could have been one of the fathers of sports promotion, key to your comment about Howard. Known as the Louisville Lip, but he was one of the first people that brought vaudevillian verb to the business of selling fights.
Yeah.
Remember his clip where he said, quote, if you sign me, if you fight me, If you decide to fight me, you need speed and endurance. What you need most of all is to increase your insurance. So it was, you know, a great comment about how he viewed things. There were so many other things that he did, but those might have been a couple of things that people have overlooked in recent days.
You know, people can spend and will spend over the next few days hours and hours and hours on the internet looking for photos, comments, clips. There's so much to review. All of the fights, as you pointed out, over the fights over the years, you know, clips or comments like, how tall are you so I can know in advance how far to step back when you fall down? You know, the funny stuff. But then live every day as if it were your last, because someday you're going to be right. You know,
yeah.
I mean, he was great, but he also said stuff that would be controversial. You know, like, I'm the most recognized and loved man that ever lived because there weren't no satellites when Jesus and Moses were around.
Yeah,
you know,
right. You know,
he upset a lot of people, but you know what? At the same time, like you said, I mean, he was the king of self-promotion.
Yeah, well, and the king of self-promotion in a way that people loved and hated, but you know, even people that didn't like him took away the fact that, man, this guy is amazing and he's at a different level and everybody knows it. And one of the regrets, I don't think people will talk about this a lot, but according to a couple of summaries, and nobody really knows, he was worth about $80 million as of 2012. Well, that's great, and he made all of his money 30, 40 years ago, so we understand it. But for the guy to be the biggest celebrity on the planet at the time, it probably should have been more. I'm sure his family is going to be really comfortable, and what people would hope from a business perspective is with Lonnie and his wife and his great family, and the respect is, you know, the Prince estate is going to be hellacious now, I got to tell you, and hopefully Ali rests in financial peace, not just normal peace. He and his wife sold an 80% stake of Greatest of All Time to CKX for $50 million. He retained a 20% stake, but no control. Then it was renamed the Core Media Group near New Era Caps. He just did a deal with Under Armour and H&M and other brands. So he came into the corporate branding world maybe a little late, but hopefully there is clearly enough financial commitment to carry his estate to the next level and continue to build his brand even after he's gone.
Rick Horrow is our guest, the professor we speak with every week about the business of sports. And I want to talk a little bit about, let's get to this Horrow Sports Brief a little bit, because there's a couple of things I got to get on here. Number one, first and foremost, Congress is really thinking about signing something into law that allow us to write off golf. Is that for real, or are you just putting that in the Horrow Sports Brief just to tease me?
No, I'm putting it in there for real to tease all of us. But let's make sure we don't talk about it too much as if it's a done deal, because probably some congressmen don't even know what's in there. Maybe they'll vote for this without realizing it. What happened is the PHIT Act is now being proposed, a tax deduction up to $1,000 for an individual a year and $2,000 for the head of a household for what? Balls, clubs, driving range expenses, instruction fees, yes, tournament entry fees. And what they say is that 81 million Americans are considered inactive, and sedentary, out-of-shape Americans cost the healthcare system that more than fit taxpayers. Yeah, and I can't think of a better way to get in shape than sit in a car, drink beer, play golf. Okay.
That's right. It's getting outside and getting busy.
You know, and I play 160 rounds a year. You know it. So quiet.
You should be a really in-shape guy then, man. You should be in tip-top shape with all that golf.
I'm going to Congress. I'm going to testify about how this is going to change my life.
Hey, listen, we've spent most of our time talking about Muhammad Ali, but I want to talk about pro football in Vegas really quick, because Ronnie Lott and some other people are trying their hardest to keep the Raiders in the Bay Area, and then there's the Tim Leiweke group that is trying to get the Raiders into Las Vegas. The Chargers are interested. What's the latest on all of that?
Isn't this interesting that in January, Mark Davis, forlorn on the stage, loses out on the Rams deal? Chargers have first option. Now, Mark Davis may have a lot of options. The Ronnie Lott deal, we're not sure if it's real yet. It's on that 200-acre Alameda County Coliseum site, and you know it's where the Warriors play as well. They're moving, so there's a lot of incentive to get that deal done in Oakland. Then, if San Diego gets a referendum passed, they have an option to go to Inglewood. The Vegas deal looks like it's real if they come up with the money for a stadium more than just the Raiders or everybody else. Hey, and don't discount St. Louis. What? What? St. Louis? Well, but they were upset, but it's possible. Raiders have a lot of options.
Wow, yeah, they really do. I want to mention this, too, because this is a beloved guy in the sports world. NBA reporter from TNT, Craig Sager, is going to receive the 2016 Jimmy V Perseverance Award. Couldn't go to a better guy, right?
Yeah, good for you to pick that out and focus on it. So during the ESPY Awards, which we should promote only because basically Sager is amazing. He met Valvano in 91 at the Pan Am Games. He has that don't give up speech on his cell phone. And obviously a big deal. It's a wonderful honor for a wonderful person.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, Sager and his jackets, I tell you what, he's really, lately, since the finals have started, I should say since the playoffs have started, his jackets have reached a new level of outrageous, I think, even wilder than the stuff you wear.
Yeah, well, see, the bottom line is when you get to a point where, you know, you're so comfortable in your inner self, kind of like I am, it doesn't really matter what you wear. I mean, I'll tell you what I wear around the house, but I don't think you want to know.
Yeah, we'll stay away from that. Rick, thanks as always for being with us, and especially your comments about Muhammad Ali this morning. Greatly appreciated, my friend. We'll talk to you next week.
See you next week.
Good stuff. Rick Horrow, the professor, joining us as he always does this morning. Okay, as I mentioned earlier, if you were with us, up next, former Cleveland Browns player Paul Zukauskas is going to join us next to talk about a special coach in his life. That could his family could use a little help. Stay with us. NBC Sports Radio and NBC Sports Radio's mobile app.
It's Jim Daniels.
If you think the world was surprised when Nixon resigned, wait till I kick Fulman's behind.
It's NBC Sports Radio, NBCSportsRadio.com. We celebrate the life of Muhammad Ali. We continue to do so in sound, in clips, in quotes. This is a great one, too. Don't count the days, make the days count. The material that he's left us with is absolutely overwhelming and in a very great and positive way. But let's shift gears here now for just a moment and talk a little bit about coaching. Paul Zukauskas played some college football for Boston College. He was drafted into the NFL, Cleveland Browns, played for them 2001 to 2004. As a graduate assistant at Boston College, he was part of the football coaching staff that guided the team to two postseason bowl appearances. So Paul understands exactly what coaching and what a great coach is all about. Paul joins us now to talk about one of the coaches that made a real difference in his life. Paul, thanks for spending time with us this morning on NBC Sports Radio. Welcome.
Thanks, Jim, for having me.
Coaches can have an incredible impact on your life, especially when you're a young player trying to find your way in sports. And many coaches get so close, they become father figures with players who might need a little extra support. Paul, you had a special coach in your life while you were at Boston College. Tell us about your time playing for Coach Don Horton, won't you?
You know, so my freshman year at Boston College was 1997, and that was the Tom O'Brien, who was the head coach his first year, and Don Horton came in as a coach with him. So my first recruiting trip, Don Horton was the first guy I met. And, you know, immediately what you find is a coach that's really engaging, asking you lots of questions, getting to know you. And what was so special about him is he actually remembered everything he asked you, you know, and all the answers to those questions, and got to know you would follow up and you know, ask you how your mom was doing if she was sick, how's your father doing, and knew about your siblings. And I think, you know, when you're coaching, you know, at that level, you can be tough on your guys, but Don was a guy that could be tough on the field, but really care and really get to know you off the field. And I think that's what, you know, made those connections special for guys like me playing for a coach like Horton.
Now, in 2004, Coach Don was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease at age 48 after learning about how advanced Don's condition was. Many of his players began writing letters to his two daughters about memories that they had of their coach and lessons that they knew he would want them to know about. Can you tell us some of the things that you wanted to share with Coach Don's kids?
You know, I think just how, you know, I think the message I wanted to get across, and I think the other guys want to get across, is how many lives he did affect as a coach. And some of us didn't play for him directly, but a lot of us were just impacted by the way he cared about us off the field. So we wanted his kids to know that he was a very knowledgeable, excellent, smart football coach, but also had that care off the field and the number of people that he affected. So, you know, it wasn't just like, you know, it wasn't just me, you know, and it wasn't just a few others. It was a lot of guys. And I think everybody saw what he was about as a person. Is a really knowledgeable, tough coach, but also a guy who knew about you off the field. And that's, you know, that's what you want to, you know, you want to play for a guy like that. And we wanted his daughters to know and feel the love and support that he showed us.
Sadly, Coach Don passed away last month, leaving behind his wife, Maura, his two young daughters. Now, just like some of Coach Don's players, his kids will have to grow up without a father. This creates an incredible void in a child's life. I know firsthand how difficult that is to overcome or try and replace. That makes it all the more important that these children hear about their father from some of his other kids, if you will, his players, just how special, how much he meant to them, right?
Exactly right. And, you know, a coach is like a father figure, especially when you're moving away from home or you don't have a parent or a father in the house. You know, they become a de facto parent, and the way Don did it was very real, very authentic, and very caring. And you know, for him, and I got a chance to see him, you know, prior to him passing, and for me to just communicate that to him and then for his family to hear from us was really important, because, you know, he was a father figure to a lot of his players.
Paul Zukauskas is joining us. Paul played at Boston College, also played for the Cleveland Browns in the NFL. We're talking about one of his former coaches, and that's Coach Don Horton. What kind of effect does a coach like Don Horton have on some players? Well, I'll tell you, it turns them into coaches, at least some of them. From 2009 to 2011, Paul was a graduate assistant at BC. In 2011, Paul served as the head football coach of the Lawrence Academy Spartans, and Paul is also a member of the American Football Coaches Association. Looks like Coach Don rubbed off on you in a big way, huh, Paul?
Yeah, I'm a high school football coach now. And we've had two really good successful years these past 2 years, winning two championships. But I think, you know, certainly understanding the effect you can have on kids outside of the fields, you know, trying to be as good of a coach as you can technically, and, you know, understanding the game as much as you can so you can give your kids a chance to win, but also, you know, impacting their lives off the field. And it can be as simple as just asking lots of questions and getting to know your kids and following up and making sure they know that you care. And that was something I certainly learned from Coach Horton.
While you're at Boston College, you were part of the coaching staff that guided the team to two postseason bowl appearances, and you worked on the defensive side of the ball with the linebackers unit and helped coach Luke Kuechly. You can usually recognize a special player right away. Was Luke Kuechly a player that stood out even at that young age?
Yes. He's one of the best football players I've ever been around. I think he came in at like, he was like 211, 212 pounds. And he immediately just worked his way into the depth chart and started as a freshman. And all of a sudden, you know, he's getting 10, 11, 12 tackles a game right. as a freshman. And you could really see how special he was, especially the questions he would ask in meetings and how much he could kind of soak in. He was, certainly on a different level, you know, amazing talent and an awesome guy, you know, an awesome guy, a real Boston College type of guy. So. You know, really proud of his success, and I don't want to take too much credit for that because he was a special talent. So,
does the Super Bowl appearance by Luke Kuechly, you know, one of your former players, does that fill you with pride to see one of your kids make it to the biggest stage in football?
I see it more as just somebody that knew a very humble, very hardworking, very talented person, kind of fulfilling. Their potential. So yeah, you're really proud of what they are accomplishing. And Luke's certainly one of the best players in the NFL and turned himself into one of the best linebackers in the history of the game. So just, it's kind of, I feel, lucky that I could even, be around a guy like that. So pretty cool.
Yeah, Paul, you also serve as an ambassador to the Heads Up Football Initiative, and you're an advisor to the Harvard Health Study for former NFL players. Talk about concussion and CTE for just a moment, if you will. Is changing the pro game to eliminate kickoffs and limit the ferocity of football the right move, or is it more about limiting the hits to players at the Pee Wee and Pop Warner and high school level more the answer?
You know, I don't think changing the rules is the answer. I think it's about how you – practice and prepare leading up to games, and then when there is a concussion or head injury, it's the practice that you have in place after there's a diagnosis. But I don't think these rule changes, so I think some of them are appropriate, but a lot of them I think are just kind of going in a different direction and changing the game. And it's a tough game, I think people understand that there's certain risk, but in terms of changing the NFL game, I don't think that's the best move, and that's just my humble opinion. And I think at the youth level, I'm a big fan of the 7-on-7s and the non-tackling, non-padded type of football mm-hmm. at the younger levels, and then it's when they get to high school they can put on the pads. But I think as long as you have a protocol in place leading up during the week, and then certainly after a head injury is diagnosed, I think that's what's most important, not really the rules within the game.
In 2014, the Lawrence Academy football team won the ISL championship and also won the ISL Sportsmanship Award. That's awarded to the team that, in the eyes of its opponents, best exemplifies the ideals of integrity, sportsmanship, and fair play. Coach Don must have been very proud of you and your team when he heard that news, yeah?
Yeah, certainly, with Coach Horton, there's a way you carried yourself as a player playing for him, playing really tough, playing to win, but also carrying yourself with a certain integrity and the way you play the game, really hard, but in a positive way. I know he's proud.
Paul, I understand that a GoFundMe account has been set up for Coach Don's family. How can people donate to that fund and help make a difference in the lives of his kids?
You'd go to Google Don Horton GoFundMe. Playing for Coach Horton is another way you can Google it. And it, just on that website, that'll pull up, and it's a GoFundMe.com. And his account is set up, and you'd click to donate with credit card information.
Right. Follow him on Twitter, @Zuki66, former Boston College Eagle and Cleveland Brown, Coach Zukauskas. Thanks for being with us this morning on NBC Sports Radio.
Thanks, Jim. Really appreciate it.
You know, ironic that Coach winds up succumbing to the same thing that we're talking about this morning, Muhammad Ali, Parkinson's disease, same thing that Paul's coach had to go through. But, yeah, the GoFundMe page is set up, and there's opportunity for you to help there when it comes to that. Coming up next, we'll bring in Pete Fox and chat with him, see if we can't get some Muhammad Ali memories rattled around in his head. It's NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com. NBC Sports Radio, NBCSportsRadio.com, the mobile app, yours, free at the App Store, Google Play Store, wherever you like to grab that stuff. Thanks for being with us. Show is brought to you this morning by Sage by Hughes. Protect your family and your home with Sage's smart home security solution. You control the system when you want through your devices. Learn more at SageByHughes.com. Pete Fox going to join us now, as he normally does at this time of the program. We're speaking of sports on NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com. You and I are kind of chuckling here, looking at some of the memorable quotes from Muhammad Ali.
My favorite, I'm a bad man.
I love that. There's just so many of them. I'm the most recognized and loved man that ever lived because there weren't no satellites when Jesus and Moses were around. So people far away in the villages didn't know about them.
Yeah. Imagine what his heyday would have been like with Twitter and Instagram.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, that's a great point to put on it, because you think about, you know, when he did his thing, he started fighting in 1960. Mm-hmm. I mean, think of how long it took news to travel, you know, around the world or even across the country. Yeah. You know, now in the Twitter world, right, the social media world that we live in, yeah, would he ever have gotten off that thing? He might have been one of those people, you know, that you just drive you crazy because right, every 5 minutes they're sending another tweet out.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know if you've seen this documentary on the Tennis Channel called Barnstormers. It's about the beginning of the transition from amateur tennis to professional tennis. And basically, you know, it's Tony Trabert and those guys, Pancho Gonzalez. They were a group of about six or eight guys who would go from town to town and play tennis against each other in front of whoever would show up at the local arena. And I was thinking, I would get old real fast, wouldn't it? It's the same six or eight guys playing against each other. But then I thought about it. Well, each town had no knowledge of what happened in the previous town,
right?
Because there was no Instagram, there was right, no Twitter, there was no social media. Sure, it might have been in the newspaper, but there was no national newspaper. There was just the local newspaper. Mm-hmm. So it was a really interesting documentary. If you like tennis at all, it's definitely a good watch.
And how about the tennis world, I guess, being shocked at the fact that Serena does not win her 22nd Grand Slam? She's upset yesterday.
Yeah, it was a heck of a match. I mean, Muguruza can bang the ball.
Belt the ball.
The sound of that tennis match was remarkable. It was just that. Both of those girls were just crushing the ball. And as I watched that match, I was thinking, Chris Evert would have been just absolutely obliterated by people like this, I think.
They hit the ball so hard.
Right. I think.
She was a great returner of serve.
Yeah. It's a different game now. And I don't think that even ladies of that age would argue it, but you kind of think, well, Martina Navratilova was the first one to maybe start to bridge the gap between mm-hmm. the finesse game and the power game. But obviously, the women today hit the ball so much more aggressively than they did back in those days. And it was a really interesting match. I couldn't believe that. I watched Serena, and I'm completely marvel at the way that she seems to be mentally stronger than the game at all times, no matter what's yeah. going on. Yeah. You think, here she is.
I'm always surprised when she loses. Right, I'm exactly always surprised right. when she
like,
loses.
She looks like she's down, and then she'll win 6-0, 6-1, and you're like, what the heck? She looked like she was out of it.
Right.
But yesterday I was thinking, yeah, she doesn't look the same, and I don't know what that is.
Father time is what it is.
More than likely, yeah. She's still the number one player in the world, and that is surprising to me at times, because she is getting up there in age, and Muguruza is 22 and hits the ball very, very hard, and played the game very well, the match rather, yesterday. So it was a pretty interesting watch.
Now, what about the men's final coming up from Roland Garros a little bit later on? Who do you like?
Look, Djokovic is he's such a dominant player without really any sort of dominant shot.
But he's never won this tournament, is that
that's
right?
True, that's
he's
true.
Never won the French.
Yeah, but he has a 7-2 record against Murray on clay.
Yeah.
Even though he lost to Murray in the Rome Open or whatever it was,
right?
I think that when there's more on the line, when there's more importance, when there's a bigger trophy sitting there for you. I think he has this ability to flip that switch, to use that terrible cliche, to, you know, ratchet it up to the next level, which generally we see from Serena. And we didn't see it yesterday. But then again, Djokovic is considerably more in the sweet spot of his career, and Serena's on the backside of it.
He's got to be in Andy Murray's head at least a little bit, right? I mean, this is the guy that he just has the hardest time with right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Without a doubt.
Great stuff, Pete. Thanks. Appreciate that. You're up next. Is that correct?
In for Coop.
Yeah.
Sports Sunday without Coop.
Because Pete Fox is next on many of these NBC Sports radio stations. We'll see you next week.